Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to Play Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with James Potts and co-hosts Jamal Potts and Zaylor Stout, only on LA Talk Radio.
All righty, another exciting week, and we're back on the air. And as always, thank you so much for tuning in to us on your Sunday evening or your Sunday afternoon, whatever the case may be. We know we're in competition with the NFL, so we're still doing good. I'm going to send a shout out to the Panthers, to my brother-in-law out there, that I got a feeling he's going to need our intervention because they've lost three games in a row, and he listens to the show. So hopefully his wife is helping him through these difficult times.
You could always tell when Washington's doing kind of good, man.
We lost today, Jamal. We actually lost today, okay?
Well, act like it.
You know, but no, because I can't control that kind of stuff. I mean, they lose. It's like the Giants today, man. Those guys lost 30-something to 11.
Did we lose today?
Oh, yeah, like you don't know. At any rate, Jamal, say hi to the people out there.
Hey, happy Sunday, everybody.
Zeller, shout out. And I know you're happy Minnesota won, so.
Of course. Always happy when Minnesota wins. Go Vikings.
Yeah, who'd they play, you know? Silence.
I'm just getting home.
I'm just teasing, man. The reason why I'm saying that, because I'm saying that about Ron, but the Panthers, actually the Minnesota Vikings actually beat the Panthers. So your uncle's not feeling too good about it, I'm sure. At any rate, hey, so today we're going to finish up talking about why kids kill. So we want to start that off because that's a very important subject. So I'm going to refresh from last week and then finish it up this week. And then, you know, the holidays are coming up. And for those of you that have been listeners consistently, you know that I always like to talk about these holiday tips on safety before the holidays actually start. So we've got Halloween coming up. We have the Thanksgiving holidays coming up, and of course Christmas. And I like to give some of these things in advance, especially for Christmas, because people are going to be doing shopping in advance. And as we know, there's some issues out there right now, possibly with doing some things in advance. So that's why we want to make sure we cover all three areas just a little bit early. So with that in mind, Jamal.
Yes, sir.
Do you have any? But you know, you want to do shout outs first? Or we want to do the blast. Do the blast first.
I think I normally do both at the same time.
Yeah, right? Well, go ahead. You know, do your blast first, Jamal. What do you got?
All right. First, I want to give a shout out to my personal trainer, man. We've been putting in a lot of work, and he competed in his first all natural bodybuilding competition, and he took first place in the main event, and he took second place in another event. So, man, I'm proud of him and the work. And I used to coach this kid in football, and now he's my personal trainer.
Okay.
And so, you know, shout out to him, man. That was a big, that, you know, I feel special. And then the blast of the week, man. I don't know how I find these stories, man, but
look for them.
They out there. There's a video that went viral of a woman who decided to cook her husband's pet fish to teach him a lesson. She told him to clean the fish tank out, and apparently he didn't get to it fast enough, and she was tired of telling him, and cooked this man's pet fish. Now, I can't think of the name of the fish. It starts with the A. Some kind of Japanese fish that starts with the A. And these fish cost, like, you know, hundreds and sometimes thousands of dollars. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So,
well,
yeah, I just can't wait to see the divorce on that.
It's coming. My question is, did he actually consume it? And then she told him.
Well, those are very small fish. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I've got a shout out. You know, we're always talking about these presidential runs and things of that nature. And I was at the house today, and I was looking through some things. And sure enough, as it turns out, I came across a campaign button that I thought I would share. And the campaign button says, Zaylor for president. So I bought that in. So Zaylor, we've got this thing that says Zaylor for president. So I thought I would bring that in. I made sure I'm going to wear that in 2024. So hopefully the audience can see that Zaylor for president. So Zaylor, here's a campaign button.
See, I wish I had known that. I would have voted for you the last action for sure. Put it this, you couldn't have done no worse than the last two, that's for sure.
And I'm not sure if this was, did you run against Hillary with this? Because, you know, red, white, and blue and everything. I mean, I don't know, you know, Azalea, maybe you might want to explain, where did this campaign button say Azalea for president?
Man.
Was that when you
I was a second year law student.
Yeah.
I ran for student body, well, actually was first year law student running for student body president for my second year, and I lost. But I won the next time I ran, when I ran as a 2L in law school for my last year of law school. So it was for student body president at law school at the University of St. Thomas School of Law.
Very good. I think, as you know, I did run for the president of my school when I was in law school also. So I guess the politics is in the family.
Well, did you win, Z?
There you go.
No, I don't think he did. That's why he didn't mention it.
Okay.
He won the second
time.
Oh, you won the second time. Okay, now I don't feel as bad because I was getting ready to tell you that I won also. So it was kind of interesting being president of the school.
In the words of 45, man, that's good, Z, because we don't like losers. So I'm glad you won, Z, because we don't like losers.
Well, see, I didn't even bring it up. See, here we go again. You know, so right. So don't be pointing any fingers at me.
Now you're gonna give him. Now you're gonna give him a reason to talk about 45.
Hey, I didn't point out any names. I didn't even say a name. I just said we don't like losers.
You always
man.
Say 45. Give me a break, man. But it doesn't matter. I didn't bring it up, so the listeners know I'm not the one that brought it up. So. It's all good.
You don't have to continue to talk about it either.
Exactly. So I'm getting ready to move on to the. Did you have a? Oh, Jamal, you already did the shout out. So that's done from that perspective. Okay, that's cool. So at any rate, Zella, I don't want to just overlook you in terms of whether or not you may have a blast or a shout out. You don't normally do, but maybe today you do. I don't know. You cool?
I'm gonna be a Clarence Thomas, so I'm gonna reserve it when I have one. Then you'll know. Wait, this must be a really good one.
Not a problem. Not a problem. So just, with that in mind,
just don't pinch anybody, Z. But go ahead.
I think that was the allegation. I'm not sure what that was, you know, supposed to be about at the time. But you know, at any rate, let's get into these emails. Jim, the Biden administration just announced United States immigration authorities will no longer carry out mass arrests of unauthorized immigrants at work sites, and he stated law enforcement should focus on holding exploitive employers accountable. What are your thoughts since you guys represent employers? Well, first of all, I am familiar with this, and Biden also called it the Trump era, you know, mass arrests, you know, at work sites. And that, I want to just correct that, even though that's not here, because that is not true. You know, when I first got in this business back in 1980, we used to go to work in the morning because we heard one of our major clients at that time was a manufacturer of faucets and things of that nature. I don't want to get into the name, but we would laugh because at least once a year, and this was like 40, you know, I told you 1980, where they got raided again. Every time we come into work, at least once a year, maybe twice a year, we heard about them being raided. So this isn't something new. This is old, and I don't think that he should have equated it as if, you know, Trump is responsible for these, you know, for these worksite, you know, types of things. This stuff goes back a long time. But I will say, okay, and by the way, this was by Susan from Jackson, Mississippi, but I will say this, all right? First of all, my opinion is I think this is a federal issue. And I don't think that it should be pushed on to local authorities because that's a state issue or a county issue or a city issue in this area. I don't think that it should be pushed that way. I think it is a federal issue because it does have to do with immigration. So anything that has to do with immigration has got to come through the feds. Now, I will say I've never been crazy about that. People hear that they're trying to work under those conditions. I don't agree necessarily with that. But and in terms of the employers, yeah, we represent employers, but we always encourage our employers to do this the right way. If they have people that are working for them that's illegal, we tell them it's a violation of the law. We tell them it could be a $10,000 fine and a misdemeanor. So we go through that. So I'm not in total disagreement that employers who knowingly violate these laws, that there shouldn't be some kind of penalty for doing that. Well, there is. It's a $10,000 fine. So there are things that are being done. So let's just keep that straight. Jamal, weigh in on this. What do you think?
I think it's kind of interesting that Biden called that the, you know, some kind of Trump law, whatever, when he was part of an administration that deported more people than any other president in U.S. history.
That's true.
Which doesn't get talked about enough. You know what I mean? So both the pros and cons of that. So I don't know why Biden would kind of throw it. Well, I know why he would do that, because that's what they do. It's all about politics and not what's best for the American people overall. So that's just typical political jargon to me.
Zella, what do you think? I mean, we represent clients.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, the part that I don't know is based on the actual numbers and statistics in regard to the last administration, whether there were more raids and more people that were deported as a result of that. But that's neither here nor there. One thing that is being brought forward, even on liberal media sources, is the fact that even under the Obama administration, there were more deportations than there were under the prior Republican administration. So these are things that are being talked about across the board. I agree with you, Jim, in regards to the fact that, you know, employers should be the ones that are holding their feet to the fire in regards to, you know, sometimes exploiting some of these employees in regards to these situations. So I support the broadening of the E-Verify situation. I know, Jim, that you think that there's some issues and problems with the E-Verify process, but requiring all employers to participate in the E-Verify system, I think, would eliminate a significant chunk of these employers who are employing folks that are undocumented and don't have the necessary paperwork to be able to work here legally in the country and fill out I-9 forms.
Well, you know, when we do HR audits, that's one of the things that we look for to make sure that the I-9s to be done. You know, the problem is the average everyday employer, in my opinion, because these individuals also get fake ID. See, that's another thing. Okay, so you have to worry about those people with the fake ID. But when we hear about these mass things like this, like Walmart that got hit back in 2003, you know, they went into 60 locations from Walmart regarding this issue. Then you're talking about wholesale, you know, exploitation. Now, it was not Walmart. It was a vendor that they used to do their maintenance service. So let's just be clear about that. So I think that there has to be some accountability for it, without a doubt. It is a $10,000 fine. ICE does go in, yes. So at any rate, so what's my feeling about it? My feeling about it is that it's not a local issue. It's still a federal issue. And I think employers really need to work hard toward making sure that anybody working for them meet the guidelines of the law. And we don't have to worry about these mass arrests, so to speak, if employers are doing their job. So, at any rate, any final thoughts,
Jamal?
I
think in order to solve the issue, I think everybody has to be honest, because both parties, both political movements is responsible for this. You know, in all honesty, on the left, the more poor people there are, the more votes they're going to get. And on the right, you know, the rich business owners who wants to pay cheaper wages. So both sides are allowing this to happen and then pointing fingers across the aisle at each other when neither one of them are working together to solve this issue, and they're both to blame.
You know, Jamal, you just said something, rich business owners, you know, that want to get the cheap labor. Let's just be clear on something, okay? All business owners are not rich, okay? People think that. Employees think like that, that all business owners are. You guys have no idea out there about what it takes to be able to have a business. And you may look at business owners as being, because they're business owners, they're rich. There's a lot of business owners out there that make all kinds of sacrifices, okay? So it's not just rich business owners. All business owners should be put in the same category. Some are doing better than others. There's no doubt about that. But this concept that every business owner is rich, I just want to make sure that we all understand that every business owner is not a rich person. And some of them make sacrifices for their employees, you know, that actually ends up costing them. Some of them don't even make as much money as some of their employees. So I just want to clarify that. Okay, let's get on to the next email. All right, Jim, did you hear the Parkland, Florida high school shooter, after 3 years, has pled guilty? He killed 14 students and 3 staff members and wounded 17. What is next, and do you think he should get the death penalty? Sharon from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Look, Sharon, here's what I think. First of all, I do believe in the death penalty under these circumstances. We've talked about the death penalty over the years on the show. He has pled guilty, which I think is good. But then I did some research. The reason why he pled guilty is because he was trying to strike a deal with the prosecution that he would not, that they would not pursue the death penalty. Now, for those of you who do not recall, that shooting was at the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, all right? And that was in February of 2018. Now, what happens? You're asking what's going to happen. Well, the penalty phase is going to come up where the jury, they'll still do a jury because they were in the process of actually selecting a jury. The delay was because of the pandemic and some other things where they were going back and forth about whether or not there should be the death penalty or not get the death penalty. So there were some negotiations that were going on in there. But I can tell you, Florida is pretty tough, you know, with this death penalty business. So, you know, this guy's not going to get off the hook. And when you start talking about the fact that this guy killed 14 students and three staff members, they're not looking for him to do to get anything but death. You know, it is just that simple. So what is my feeling about it? Hey, goodbye is the way I look at it. Are they giving the death penalty? They give him the death penalty as far as I'm concerned. Now, just as a side note, you guys remember Scott Peterson was the police officer that was there who did not go in. He is actually, he's been charged with felony, with a felony child neglect, and also lying to the investigators. So just as a side note, you guys out there, that guy is being prosecuted. And in my opinion, he should not have done what he did. He lied and said he did not know where the shooter was or what's going on. And that's not an accurate statement because he had his radio on, because I did the research. He had his radio on, and he knew everything that was going on. So if they prosecute him, hey, you know what? He had a job to do, and he didn't do it. Zell, I'll let you weigh in first before we come to Jamal, if you have any comments on this.
No, I agree that he had a job to do, and if he didn't do it, then yeah, there are legal ramifications as it relates to that. I mean, I think that this... I mean, I'm sure you did your research in regards to this too. This is the first time there's like similar charges like this has been put forward with a security officer that didn't do their job and kind of went the other way during a mass shooting kind of situation.
I'm sure that there's probably those kind of things out there. So remember what this is, felony child neglect. You don't hear about this like that. And I'm not sure. Yeah. You said security officer. I don't know that he was a security officer or a regular police officer. He may have been school security.
He was the police officer that didn't go inside during the shooting.
That's right. So I think he was a police officer.
Listen, man. Under those circumstances,
you got to go in.
I can't. That's the thing. I can't speak for him.
Right. I agree with that.
You should go in, but you know that's easier to say when you're standing there by yourself and you hear these gunshots going off, man. You know, what's the first rule of law? Self-preservation for a lot of people, right? That's what they say. I mean, not everybody, not all heroes wear capes, man. And this dude clearly was not that guy. You know, some people are in it for a job. They want to go home. We always talk about how officers want to go home to their families also at the end of the day. Guy was scared. I can't fault that man for being that scared. Should he be fired? Yes.
You know, Jamal, you do bring up a good point in terms of the fact that not to put ourselves in his shoes, okay? But remember, he also is being tried for lying. So if he didn't go in, you follow what I'm saying? And they know that he did not go in, then to me, he still could have fessed up in terms of that part. He didn't need to lie to the investigators, okay? But people do lie. There's no doubt about it. You know, he was probably... you know, worried, scared, or whatever the fact, because he didn't go in. But look, I can only speak for me. And, you know, as a police officer, if I'm on the outside and my job as a police officer, Jamal, the minute you get sworn in with that badge, you take on a certain responsibility, okay? And at a minimum, if this involves children and children are being shot, and he heard the shots,
right?
Okay, to me, there's an obligation there.
Right.
And I would not, there's no way I would have stayed outside for me personally.
Right.
Okay. And I get your point.
Yeah.
Okay. But you know, then he was in the wrong job is what I'll say.
Yeah. But sometimes you don't find that out until you're in the heat of the moment.
Well, okay.
We don't know when we're going to freeze up. We all say we would do such and such. But a lot of us don't know until that situation's happened. Sometimes people's feet get cold, man. I've heard it happens out there on the battlefield with a lot of soldiers too. Like, you know.
Well,
yeah, but Jamal, the thing is, like, normal people aren't in jobs where that's the requirement.
Right.
In the job where that's the requirement. I mean, you go, if it's the police officer, you go to the academy, all this kind of stuff. I mean, this is part and parcel of the job.
It is.
The expectation in regards to what a reasonable police officer would do under the circumstance.
Right.
That's what the jury is going to be tasked with looking at. And if your reasonable police officer's responsibility is to protect and serve. It's in the language.
We had a writer, and this person, I mean, a listener from Florida that actually says, yes, he was a police officer. So this person is actually in Florida. So that clears that up. Thank you, listener, for that. Look, Jamal, again, everybody is not built the same way. And I don't deny that. Okay. I mean, I had situations where, you know, I had to encounter people that were robbing and had guns and had to have guns pointed at me and the rest of that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's you take on a certain thing when you put on that badge, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So unless it's an ego thing, and then if you're doing it because of ego, then you're definitely in the wrong business. But look, the jury will hear everything. He's pleaded not guilty. Let's wait and see what the outcome of it's going to be, because they'll be subject to all of the issues now that we probably won't hear. But neglect, child neglect, I think that's a stretch, Jamal, to answer your question.
Right.
But the lying is going to be there, and at a minimum, he's probably going to be convicted of that. Right. At a minimum. You know, I'm sure the guy's probably already lost his job. Okay, let's get to the last one. Jim, the Department of Justice is calling parents who are speaking out against what their children are being taught, domestic terrorists. With your background, please clarify why the DOJ can classify those people as domestic terrorists. Look, in my opinion, they cannot classify these people as domestic terrorists. They are doing that, in my opinion, because they do not want these people speaking out on the issue. It has to do with what these people, what the school district wants to teach these children. I think parents should have a say-so in what these children are being taught. Now, you know, to me, it has to still be reasonable. I get that. You go in there and you want them to teach, you know, some nonsense course or something. I don't know. But I don't agree with that. I don't agree that they should be labeled as domestic terrorism, as domestic terrorists. These people are just speaking out. And what's happening here, in my opinion, is that they're trying to muffle them from getting away from this critical race theory that they want to teach, and are teaching other things that these individuals are not happy about, asking them whether or not about transgender, what they feel about sex. I mean, some of these are young kids that they're doing this with. I'm not saying that this should not be, you know, some education at some point with some of this, but I'm not sure that the grade levels, you know, should be where they are either, because this is what, K through 12. I think there's a certain age group that maybe some of this should be for. Zell, I'll let you weigh in first on this, since Jamal had the last one. What do you think?
I think it depends on what these parents are doing. If these parents are going to the school board members' homes, terrorizing them, knocking on their windows, threatening them, flashing, arms at them and their neighbors, that's a different story.
Is that what's happening?
Elected officials. That is what's happening.
Go ahead.
I can send you the clip from somebody that just testified in regard to that to a school board meeting, and she's been making the rounds on the news as it relates to that. So if that's what's happening, that's terrorism to a certain extent. I don't know if the definition of domestic terrorism is, but these are elected officials that are supposed to do a job. I don't have any issues in regard to them going and asserting their First Amendment rights. The clip that I'm going to send to you, the woman indicates she doesn't have any problems with people exhibiting their First Amendment rights, even outside her house, on public land, but when they're coming onto her property and terrorizing her and her minor child and her neighbors and things of that nature and putting threats and gasoline on her grass and all that kind of stuff, that's a different story. So what? It's not saying every person that goes to the school board meeting is engaged in this type of conduct, but there are people that are engaging in this type of conduct. And I think if it crosses the line in regard to this, you know, criminal activity, and then yes, they should be held accountable in regard to that.
Well, that's interesting.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
The only part I was going to add, because you, of course you brought in the critical race theory and all that kind of part. What about the last part that just came in recently, where there's you know, I don't know if it was a superintendent at the school thing. Well, if you're going to talk about the Holocaust, then you also need to make sure that there's the counter view as it relates to whether the Holocaust was a bad thing, that should be presented if the teacher is going to be teaching that the Holocaust was a bad thing. You know, I think there's we're just kind of going awry in regards to creating a fair and balanced kind of situation. There isn't anything fair and balanced about the Holocaust. There's nothing fair and balanced in regards to, you know, slavery in this country. There are certain things where human beings as a global society have decided that these are things that shouldn't be happening. And there shouldn't be a fair and balanced view and perspective in regards to those things. That's not what critical race theory is about. That's not what the Holocaust and stuff and those types of things are about. So I just think it's kind of getting out of hand.
Yeah, well, that's interesting in terms of your summation on that. And I'm not going to say that I disagree with anything that you're saying, but I wish it would be applied equally. Because I remember when Jackie Lacey, okay, with her husband, Jackie Lacey was the former L.A. County District Attorney, and Black Lives Matter was doing all kinds of things, beating on their door, showing up and everything. And there was no outcry about that kind of behavior. Maxine Waters turning around and on the news, you know, screaming and hollering. You know, if you see any of those Republican, you know, politicians in restaurants or whatever, you know, go after them, drive them out of there. I mean, look, Zayla, I agree with you. Can I finish? Or are you going to jump in the middle of my conversation again? Okay. What I'm saying is that any type of extremism, in my opinion, is wrong. And I would, you know, I think we lost Zayla just then. I'm not sure whether he hung up or he'll be calling back.
Keep your thoughts.
At any rate, any type of extremism, in my opinion, is wrong. So I want to make that clear. So I'm not disagreeing with what he's saying. Anybody showing up on somebody's front door and doing things like that. But this is amazing to me because how many of these politicians, extremists, are some of these people doing? Look at the lady that's the Democrat that's not voting for the infrastructure bill. And this is Zayla. Should I answer his call? Okay, I'll answer his call. I almost didn't answer your call, Zayla, but now I want you to hear this. And I'm just teasing. That the extremists on this lady, the congressperson, that they're going into the bathroom videotaping her because she's a Democrat, and they won't, because she doesn't want to vote for the infrastructure bill the way that it's written. So extremism, Zayla, I agree with you. Anybody that's engaged in any kind of extreme behavior, okay, whether you want to call it domestic terrorism or the violating some local law, I think it should be addressed. So I'm not, you know, fully disagreeing with what you're saying from that perspective. Okay?
Agreed.
Okay.
And I can assure you that there are people on the right who have been vocal in regards to that conduct not being appropriate. And I don't know anybody that would be mad about prosecuting people that are violating those rights.
Jamal, did you have anything that you wanted to add?
Nah, man, because this is one of those things, man, I get irritated, man. And, you know, it's funny how, man, we can see it for the side we don't like, but then or we get light-handed with the other, when it comes to the other side. You know, we go round and around in a circle with this one, man. But we can push it along.
All right, that's not a problem. So obviously Jamal doesn't agree with Zayla on his rendition of what he was talking about. He agrees with me, so we can move on.
Hey, that's fine by me.
Hey, let's go. Let's get going. At any rate, the business we were talking about last week about why kids kill, I want to read something. This months had passed, and the sixth grader decided that he wanted to die. And on a particular day, he hoped it would be his last day had come. The boy snuck into his father's bedroom, reaching into a dresser drawer for the loaded magazine and 9mm handgun he was told never to touch. He hid them both inside his backpack and then went to school. I hope my death makes more sense than my life. The 12-year-old had already jotted this down in a spiral notebook, and that his plan was to commit suicide by cop because he thought that if he killed himself, that he feared God, or he feared he would be offending God, and that it would be a sin. What happened was he ended up going to the school. He shot a couple of rounds into the ceiling. When he saw the fear on people's faces and people screaming and hollering, he unloaded the gun and just sat there and waited for the police, hoping that the police would come in and shoot him. Look, these kids, guys, this is sad. And this commentary is not new from that perspective, that some of these kids, for some reason, feel that they want to end their lives. And it's too bad at such a young age that they, in fact, would feel that way. So these school shooters and why they do these things, it's really a long list of the reasons why. But the United States Department of Education actually put out a list, what they call as a school shooter profile. And it told, in their list, it told them to watch out. So here these kids are off to themselves. Now, these kids that are shy, that are off to themselves, you never know. Zeller, Jamal, you know, we've talked about this even in the work environment, you know, for the active shooter programs that we do. And in terms of being able to watch out for the ones that's withdrawn, they're all to themselves. This speaks to the fact that they're feeling isolated. They feel rejected. A lot of kids in school may feel rejected, but they don't necessarily always go to these extremes. I mean, you guys were all in high school. Did you guys know people that were kind of withdrawn into themselves, did not participate? I'll ask Jamal first.
Oh, yeah. No, I have known that. And they, you know, they end up being like normal kids, but you never know what people are going through at home. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like we was also in a whole different time period. Now I'm starting to sound old. But you know what?
Hey, that's right. Jamal had a birthday yesterday. Hey, everybody, I forgot. Let's do a shout out for Jamal for his birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Jamal.
Thank you, man.
So how's it feel to be 50?
It feels good, man. I had to stretch before I got up out the bed, but I'm not quite 50.
Not 50, guys. I'm just teasing.
But, yeah. But I feel like we come from a different era, man, because I remember we were standing in circles and bag on each other. And, I mean, it was just like no holds barred. You know what I mean? But you had to have thick skin. I don't know what's going on, and I'm not trying to undermine anybody and stuff like that, because to me, I think you could never stop people from being bullies. That's never going to stop. I think we need to focus more on self-esteem of our children. I think we need to have more conversations with our children about what's going on at school, how you feeling today. That's a very important question to ask. How are you feeling? Now, how are you really feeling inside? Is there anything you want to talk about? You know what I mean? And some kids might not talk. Some kids might get quiet. But you got to, you know, just do the work to build that trust with your kids.
Well, Jamal, I don't disagree with that. Here's what I will say. I will say that, and I think we all know this already, that kids can be very vicious. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. And that goes back to when, you know, we were in school. I mean, this is not something that's new, obviously. We went to all private schools. We were the only blacks in the school. So we kind of caught hell. But, again, we didn't come back with guns and shooting up the place. Right.
Now, I'll tell you what I used to do as a kid, man, because when we get in these circles, man, bags, some people call it the dozens and stuff, you know, if you said a good one, all the kids say, ooh.
Right.
Now, if I said three in a row and the kids would say, ooh, but the other kid was getting all the oohs, my feelings would get hurt. And right before that teardrop, the fight would start.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't check. I couldn't
Well, let's hear from Zeller. Zeller, what do you think about this?
No, as you indicated, I mean, bullying has been something that's you know, part of, unfortunately, adolescence and schools for a long time. I think one of the challenges and the differences is in regards to bullying these days is before, when you left school and you got home, at least there was like an 8-10 hour period when the bullying didn't necessarily continue. But now with social media and stuff, it's like constant and habitual and all the time, and it continues on outside of the schoolyard. And so I think that's what
because of social media.
Some of the kids these days.
I mean, because of social media. As an example. Yeah. Yeah, social media, I think we've talked about social media and the impact that it has. It's really bad.
Yeah.
The other things that they're talking about is that they're feeling victimized by violence, feeling persecuted. They have low school interest and poor academic performance. Well, listen, there's a lot of kids that have low school interest, in my opinion. I mean, I know that they're talking about a profile. Somebody got together, like I said, this is from the United States Department of Education. But there's a lot of kids who have low school interest. I mean, I didn't have a lot of school interest when I was, you know, when I was in there. It wasn't until I got to college that I did well because, again, the school, I mean, I think we talked about this in the past, Jamal, that, you know, I mean, they're pushing things on you, pushing subjects on you that, you know, that have no interest. Algebra. What would I ever need algebra for if I wanted to go into law? Nothing. You know, we lost Zeller again. Not sure what's going on. At any rate, then they talk about that they express violence in writings and drawings. So parents that are out there, grandparents included. You know, these kids, they doodle, they put things down on their pads and things of that nature. Take a look at that and see what they're coming up with some of this. The one that concerns me the most is the next one, and that's when these children show uncontrolled anger. So the uncontrolled anger thing, the uncontrolled anger thing, in my opinion, I think is important, because now that anger has to be released. And if they've got uncontrolled anger, you don't know what they're capable of doing from that perspective. Impulsively or chronically hitting, intimidating, or bullying, I think that we're all on the same page with that. Then they have something here interesting. They're saying needing to be disciplined. Now think about something for a moment. Needing to be disciplined. Okay, first of all, that's one of the issues, in my opinion, that we have. Let's just take California, for example. If you turn around and try to discipline a child in California, you better be careful. If you spank that child with a strap, you better be careful, because if you leave a mark in California, it's a felony. So, you know, some of these kids go unpunished for some of their behavior. Jamal, go ahead. I see you.
By strap, you mean a belt, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You got to clarify. Strap means something totally different to a lot of people.
Yeah, well, that's true, too, you know, depending on who we're talking to. But I'm talking about a belt.
Right.
You know, when I was little, my father said, go get the strap, you know, so we knew what that meant. Yeah, I mean, he was a truck driver.
Yeah, my dad said the same thing, man.
Yeah. Well, your dad had to do, but unfortunately, it didn't seem to make any difference, you know, when it all really just came out. So
I'm okay.
You know, now I will say that, Jamal, you turned out okay. It was a lot of hard work, but...
hey, man, I was worth it, brother.
All of our children are worth it. There's no doubt about that. Zella, you can jump in at any time. I'm just going down this list, you know. So then they talk about a history of violent and aggressive behavior. Well, that should always be a concern, in my opinion, violent behavior. This guy that was the shooter that we're talking about earlier, when I did my research on him to get the update on him, where he lived, his father was not in the household. He had a mother and a brother who he lived with, and the police were constantly being called to their residence for one thing or another. His mother passed away, and when he moved to move in with some friends or somebody was going to take him in, what did he bring with him? 10 guns. The guy had 10 guns, okay? So, you know, there's issues there, okay? He also got kicked out of that same school, Majoro Stoneman. He got kicked out of the same school. So he had issues. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
You know. So history of violent and aggressive behavior. I think this one is interesting. Low tolerances for differences. Well, I don't know. You know, there should not be a low tolerance for that, but there are people that are just intolerant with some of this stuff. So not sure where they're coming from on that note. Using drugs and alcohol. Well, I can tell you that, as you know out there, I wrote a book called Defending a Serial Killer. By the way, it's doing very well on Amazon. If any of you haven't picked it up yet, please do so. Same thing with Zayla's book. Zayla's book is doing very well as well. You can Google our names and find these books. They're out there. But one of the things that the serial killer who I represented, he was using drugs and alcohol at a very young age. He was bullying kids. He was doing all of those things. So there is some correlation here. Now, the next one they talk about is affiliation with gangs. Now, Jamal, I'll let you kind of address that. You know, South Central had a lot their share of their share of gangs, for
right.
Sure.
Growing up in L.A., man, you were going to know gang members. You was going to know them, grow up with them, interact with them, have a problem with them. It's just a natural part of life, like growing up down there. Like, even though we grew up in a, it was an area like close to being called like the Black Beverly Hills and stuff like that.
Yeah, View Park.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
There's View Park, Baldwin Hills, Ladera Heights, and, you know, those areas. But, man, you go down to the bottom of the hill, you know what I mean? You had to keep your head on a swivel.
Right.
Just going to the liquor store, the convenience stores, and things like that. It's just a natural part of everything.
Zella, you grew up, you went to high school in Ventura. Any differences in your opinion between Ventura and, you know, some of the areas we're talking about with South Central? I mean, I would think that there'd be a big difference. How was your high school?
I mean, there's always going to be the kids that are like the outsiders that people make fun of, that don't have a bunch of friends, that are kind of, you know, especially during my time, which would have been during the 80s and the early 90s, you know, folks that were into goth and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it wasn't something that most folks were into. And so, you know, those are the folks that are the ones that end up getting picked on and things of that nature. And, you know, when kids get ostracized more and more and more, it seems, at least, you know, based on, you know, looking at some of the demographic information that's thrown out in regards to some of the profiles of these kids,
mm-hmm.
that's part of what makes the difference, right? And mm-hmm. so, you know, trying to bring those insiders in, and if they had one friend or two friends at the school, would it be less likely that they would shoot it up and kill everybody? Perhaps,
mm-hmm. you know? Well, this also, there's only two left on the list, and then we're going to get to these safety tips. But it says having access to firearms or threatening violence. Now, you know, the access to the firearms is interesting because, again, it depends on what state you're from also. Some of these states out there, these kids are hunting at 8 years old, 9 years old. There was one shooter, this kid, I think it was Arkansas. I think I've talked about this on the show. I mean, he got his first hunting rifle at the age six. You know, when he was 12, he shot 26 students at a school. So the inner city kids don't really have as much access, and understand what I'm saying with this, because they're not hunters and things of that nature. So they may be exposed to weapons that maybe, you know, the dad or mom has inside the house for protection or something like that, or if there's a gang affiliation, whatever the case may be. But as we've talked about on the show, all firearms need to be secure, and that's part of the problem. And then the last one that they say is watch.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Before we finish that, even going to a private school, man, I used to see guns in the classrooms. You know what I mean? I remember distinctly there was a kid sitting next to me that was actually loading a firearm in class underneath his desk while the teacher was asking him a question. And, of course, the teacher couldn't see it. He kept it out of sight. I mean, these are all dangerous situations,
well,
man.
Well, Jamal, I guess my question would be to you, and I know that this is probably not, you know, the smartest question, but did anybody report that? The answer is probably no, right?
No.
Right. Why not?
Because we have a don't tell policy in our culture. We have a don't talk policy in our culture. You see stuff like that, you mind your business. If you're not the one getting hurt, it's not aimed for you.
Well, that's interesting, Jamal, because with the police officer situation, and you say the one thing you don't like is that police officers don't speak out against another police officer, would that be the same scenario?
Yes, that's why I say the police is a gang. Thank you.
You know.
Thank you. I'm glad you validated my point. I'm bringing it up.
Are you saying that it's all similar? I'm not saying you said something wrong.
No, it's very similar. But they took an oath, like you just mentioned earlier, and swore on the badge that they would be different than the criminals on the streets. So they should be held to a higher standard, I believe. But
Well, hold on now. You guys have never heard me say that police officers shouldn't be held to a higher standard.
Right.
A, they should be. B, if they make a mistake, there's accountability. Okay? So I agree with that. So at any rate, I think with all of these things is that there's warning signs. You know, the warning signs are out there. The problem is, and I've done this in some of the lectures that I've given on these active shooter situations, is that people don't pay attention to the warning signs. Sometimes these kids are crying out, nobody's listening, and that's part of the problem as well.
Right.
Okay, you know what? We're going to have to move on from here. That kind of finished up that. I had nothing. And if you notice on the news over the last couple of months, we've heard about some of these active shooter situations in some of these schools. I think Texas had the last one a couple of weeks ago as an example. These are definitely sad scenarios. At any rate, parents that are out there, grandparents that are out there, talk to these children. Take the time to sit down and listen to what they're saying. Watch what they're doing on the internet, you know, as well. I think these are all factors as well. And the other thing is, take the time to talk to their teachers. Find out from their teachers how the child is performing in school in terms of getting along, you know, with their peers and things of that nature. I think that's important, too.
The social skills.
Yeah, the social skills are important, okay? Okay, we're going to be talking about, well, what we got here is Halloween is coming up first. I'm trying to remember, who's doing Halloween?
Me.
Right. So Jamal is doing Halloween. We're probably not going to get to the other two, which is okay because the other one, Zale, is doing Thanksgiving, and I'm doing Christmas like we talked about. So let's get into, at a minimum this week, talking about some of these Halloween tips. Jamal, what do you got?
I know we run out of time, so I'm going to make it quick. Some of the things you want to do for Halloween, especially with your kids, is you want to wear bright, reflective costumes, you know, in case your kids get lost or wander off. You know, streetcars can see them at night because Halloween is more of a night activity. So you want to make sure that your kid is very visible. Two, make sure if you got to keep your kid on a leash because they run out, you know what I mean? Don't have them darting across streets. Make sure your kids are walking in a single file line. I know that's off the list, but that's one of the things I recommend. Wear makeup if you can as much as possible rather than hats and masks that might block your vision.
Okay, let's stop there for a second. That's interesting because I was wondering what we were going to say about masks because it still is, COVID is still an issue. So I like the idea about wearing the makeup versus the mask, okay? But the mask also, you know, could hopefully, you know, protect them against the spread of COVID as well. Right. So it depends. I think it means depending upon the kind of mask that they're wearing.
So we're going to have a bunch of kids walking around as doctors and nurses for Halloween this year. And hazmat.
Yeah, but they could always wear, I hear you loud and clear, but these kids, I mean, you look at some of the things that are being sold out there with these Halloween costumes, man. But anyway, go ahead, Jamal.
Test the makeup before you go out on small amounts. Make sure you're not allergic to anything or have any allergic reaction. Once again, vibrant colors, you know, makeup for Halloween. Let me see. Don't wear nothing that's going to block your eye vision, like color contacts that might test all of that stuff out before you go out at night. Especially if you're, you know, at an adult party and you're drinking and stuff like
okay,
that.
Okay, now we switch from children to adults, though, because that's what I was getting ready to say. So now we're at adults, because now you're talking about Halloween masquerade parties.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. Sometimes people, I don't know if people let their kids wear color contacts. And
right,
kind of
okay.
Too,
well, so. That might be true.
Yeah.
Some of the older kids.
You know, especially for kids, don't eat candy until it's been inspected at home. Eat a snack before heading out to avoid the temptation of nibbling while you're out there on the streets trick-or-treating. In case of food allergies, check the label to ensure they don't have any peanuts or something else that the kids might be allergic to. Parents of very young children should remove any choking hazards such as gum, peanuts, hard candies, or small toys and that type of stuff. Inspect commercially wrapped treats for the signs of tampering. Don't take anything for granted. Just make any assumptions that, you know, that everything is A-okay and trust everybody because you just cannot trust everybody. It's just, matter of fact, you know what? This is my rule. When all that candy come home, dump it in the trash and buy your own candy from the store. Don't let the kids see it and put your own mixture in there. Trust you. So that way they had the experience of trick-or-treating and when the kids wasn't paying attention, you dumped all that stuff in the trash and put your fresh candy in there. I think that's a good idea.
You know, this is not a new issue. When we were younger and we were trick-or-treating in Brooklyn, they had people putting razor blades in apples. Because back in those days, they did a lot with apples, too. Because apples were real easy, you know, fruit. Now, Jamal, what do you go? Who the hell was giving apples out?
No. There's people giving apples. I just saw on the list that there was bobbing for apples. Who is for apples?
Jamal, that was a big deal when we were coming up, when we had the local Halloween festivals. And they would take, you know, and throw 30, you know, apples into a bin, so to speak, with water. So the apples are floating.
Yeah.
So you get, you know, you kneel down and you try to get one of the apples, Jamal, because you have to use your mouth to do it. You just don't pick up your hand.
Everybody's saliva all in his tongue.
But you know what, Jamal, back then, nobody was thinking about that like that.
Man.
We got one of our production managers over here waiting, you know, shaking her head. Oh, heck no. You know, but
that's back when you was living at a little house on a prairie lifestyle.
Well, that was up in upstate New York. Zeller, you're making a comment. Did you do that, Zeller?
Yeah, we have that in the 80s. Absolutely.
Yeah, bobbing for apples is what it was called.
Yeah,
you know, so bobbing for apples was bob. But you're right, Jamal. But we weren't thinking about that back then. I mean, and not to mention the fact we knew all the other kids and things of that nature back then. If somebody says, "Hey, let me have a swig of your soda," we would just take the soda and take it and hand it back to the person.
See, I was in that generation where they started doing waterfalls.
And everybody was vaccinated.
And we say, Zella, everybody was vaccinated as well.
Man.
You know, that's true.
Yeah, so
but
didn't worry about it.
With the back those days, it, you know, wasn't as much to worry about with that stuff, man, to be honest with you. Like I said, somebody had a candy bar. Can I get a bite? Yeah. They had a hamburger. Can I get a bite? Nobody thought about it. But these days, ain't nobody, you know.
It was something to worry about back then. You guys were just less aware. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Well, with that, we're going to have to end because we're at the time frame and we always come out. So look, we got these tips out there. Please pass the information along. I know Jamal was moving a little quick with it, but these shows are all archived, so you can always pass it around. All right, listen, do us a favor. If you like what you heard, spread the word. Until next week, we want you to be safe out there. Jamal, sign off, man.
Hey, happy Sunday, everybody.
All right, Zeller, say your goodbyes.
Enjoy the rest of the weekend, folks.
All right, take care, everybody. Until next time, be safe out there.
You're listening to Listen Up with James Potts and co-hosts Jamal Potts and Zaylor Stout, only on LA Talk Radio.